Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, May 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, thanking the nurses, clinical teams, and the entire staff at Saratoga Hospital for the care they provide. Saratoga Hospital, people you trust, care you deserve, saratogahospital.org. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Robert Sachs. He's an ophthalmologist, retinal specialist, and director of retina services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region. He is here to answer your questions about eye care and treatment. Give us a call, 800-348-2551 if you have a question, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Robert Sachs and your calls coming up on Vox Pop Medical Monday, right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today on this Medical Monday is ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. Dr. Sachs is a retinal specialist and has been director of retina services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region since 1989. He specializes in macular degeneration, retinal vein disease, and diabetic retinopathy. If you have a question for Dr. Sachs today, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us, as several people already have done. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, but the number, once again, 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Everybody healthy on your end?
We're holding up.
Good, man, good. It's a strange time we are in, but thank you for joining us via the telephone. Believe it or not, we have four emails here that came in well before the show started. So let's get to those, and the phone lines are already loading up. I think it'll be a busy hour. This one came in from Lou, and Lou writes, is there any association between unresolved cataracts and dizziness? If yes, please expand on the answer. That's from Lou in Altamont.
All right. Well, cataracts, to define them for everybody's benefit, is when the natural lens of the eye becomes clouded, becomes opaque rather than transparent, becomes discolored rather than clear. And over time, it limits your vision. It's like watching a window turn from a perfectly clear piece of glass into a pair of dirty sunglasses, both cloudy and discolored. And, you know, it can affect your vision in many ways, not just your ability to read or see or to have lights that are glary, like headlights at night become really irritating, but also because you're not seeing as well, there can be episodes of dizziness. It's not the only reason. In fact, if you're dizzy, there's other potential reasons that should be explored, but it can contribute to that. So it's something that should be looked at with your ophthalmologist.
This one is from Carol in South Troy. Carol writes, I had cataract surgery in both eyes about 9 months ago. Since then, I have continued to have rebound inflammation whenever I stop the steroid drops. Is there anything I can do to treat this? And that's from Carol in South Troy.
Well, hopefully somebody's looking at you to see why there's there's inflammation in both eyes. Is the inflammation inside the eye and, you know, something to do with the way the cataract surgery was, occurred, or is it something else like surface of the eye inflammation? So these things need to be explored. If you're on chronic steroids, though, it's something that needs to be monitored because there are potential problems with long-term use of steroids. So be careful and make sure your ophthalmologist is looking at you.
All right, this one's from another Carol, this one in Saratoga. Carol writes, I'm an artist, pushing 50, and for the past 10 years, I'm increasingly troubled by my eyes being sporadically unable to resolve fine detail, even with my glasses. When I go to the eye doctor, they can't seem to find any problem. They just recommend 1.75 reading glasses and a very minor distance correction. But this is a very real and devastating problem to me, as I'm a visual artist. I suspect it has to do with dry eye, because my eyes get gritty often now. What is this? What can I do about it? Just being told, you're getting older, is not helpful to me because, as a visual artist, this is my life. And that's from Carol in Saratoga.
Absolutely right. She mentioned dry eye as a possibility. I mean, you have to look at other reasons inside the eye, but dry eye is terribly common. It's caused by, as you might imagine, getting older, environmental issues. But the surface of the eye is covered by a very important layer of tears that has to be of a certain quality and quantity. And when you don't have enough tears, your eyes don't feel right, but also they don't see well. That surface, that initial surface, is the most important surface that bends the light as it enters into the eye. So if your tear film is irregular, inadequate, somehow not right, that could cause those problems. And we do a lot of dry eye work in our offices to try to get people better. And there are some new medications out there. There are other treatments. But that's one thing to look at, as well as the possibility of a cataract or other things that I would hope would have been picked up along the way. But don't give up if it's a dry eye. Dry artificial tears are the first line to try to replenish what's not there. But there are many steps we can take beyond that point to improve your eye surface and make it smoother and more regular.
I know we've talked about this before, but remind me, what is actually the difference between artificial tears and, say, distilled water?
Well, distilled water is just H2O.
Right.
It has no minerals in it. Artificial tears are actually designed by some of the more aggressive companies to try to look like and act like your natural tears, which contain layers of, they contain dissolved proteins and minerals and antibodies. That's what your natural tears contain. There's also a layer of a fine oil that covers the surface of the tears. And so the artificial tear manufacturers are trying to duplicate the viscosity, the pH, and other qualities of the tears to give you something that's as close to your normal tears as possible. And as I say, we also work very diligently to try to get people to make better tears, both in quality and quantity, and there are things we can do to help that. That's actually a better way of doing things because you're replacing your missing tears with natural tears. But artificial tears, well-made, can be a stopgap measure.
We are joined today on this Medical Monday by ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. We'll do one more email here, doctor, and then we'll take a quick break and then hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number if you want to get in the queue. This is from Martha in Hadley with a question about her eyes. Martha writes, I'm 63 years old and I've worn glasses since I was 10. I'm nearsighted, and at most, my most recent eye exam, the optometrist told me I have something equivalent to an exfoliation on the lens in my left eye. What does this mean exactly? Would it lead to loss of sight in that eye? I'm sorry, I can't remember what he called it. He didn't make a big deal out of it, just said I should have an eye exam every year. What can you tell me? That's from Martha in Hadley.
It's likely a condition called pseudoexfoliation, which is not a true, you know, when you think of exfoliation, you think of like skin falling off or a layer. That's not what it is. It's a protein that's made in the eye in abnormal quantities, and it can cause some changes in the eye. For example, one of the things we're most concerned about in people who have that is when we do cataract surgery, which occurs in everybody, you need cataract surgery. Yeah. But we have to be extra careful because there's a certain weakness to some of the structures in the eye in people who have this abnormal protein. But it's compensated for, and the surgeries turn out to be just fine as a rule. There's really, you know, it really doesn't have much other effect. It can cause some forms of glaucoma because the protein can be somewhat sticky and gets into the drainage ports inside the eye, the little fine molecular drains. But really, it needs to be looked at and anticipated if anything needs to be done in the future, like cataract surgery. And you should be checked for potential glaucoma. So that's what we're talking about with that.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest, and we will welcome your calls in a moment. We'll take a quick break. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Medical Monday, we'll be right back. Medical Monday, Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs, and the phone lines, doctor, are loaded, so let's get right to it. We start out with Susan in Lenox, Massachusetts. Susan, you're up.
Hello.
Hi.
I had cataract surgery in both eyes last year, and since then I've developed a problem of seeing double. The eye doctor said that one eye was below the other, and he put a little prism on my glasses as a temporary thing, and I'm supposed to go back and see if it should be made permanent, if I should get new lenses. But it isn't really helping in the way that I had hoped. So what are my alternatives?
Well, it sounds like there may be a little misalignment of the eye that was revealed, in a sense, by the cataract surgery, not caused by it necessarily. But it just needs to be watched. Sometimes it does go away. You said this happened last year in the surgery, so you have to be careful about that. But sometimes a little bit of prism in the glasses needs to be adjusted to realign the way the eyes see together. The brain also works very hard to try to merge the images, and a little prism may be all that's necessary to bring the two eyes into visual alignment and allow that to kind of go away. But I would certainly, you know, follow up as suggested, and if that's not helping and they can't come up with anything else, seek another opinion to see if you can find something else that might be helpful to get that problem under control.
Yeah, I have been wearing a temporary prism in my glasses
right.
for a couple of weeks now, and it's not really helping.
It takes sometimes longer than a couple of weeks for it to for you to adapt to it. Your brain has to kind of learn to use the two eyes together. Was there a difference in the vision of the two eyes before the cataract surgery, a significant difference, or a difference in the power of the eyes, the thickness of the lenses and the glasses before the surgery?
One eye has astigmatism and doesn't see as well as the other, but there wasn't the double vision prior
right.
to the cataract surgery.
Right. Yeah, you know, you wonder if one of the eyes is not as strong as the other, and it's going to take a little time for the brain to kind of realize that it now sees better thanks to the cataract surgery, and time is going to be your help here. But again, you know, just make sure you stay in touch and have that prism adjusted if necessary. I know they have these little cutout prisms, and sometimes putting the permanent prism in the glasses is quite helpful once you get kind of used to the stick-on prism. But, again, it takes longer than sometimes a couple of weeks for you to get used to that.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest on Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Hello, Jim.
Sorry. What eye condition is most likely to cause the appearance of distant objects disappearing into the background?
What condition? Well, there are several that can do that, but, you know, contrast is important for the brain to visualize different images and determine their distance from you and their separation from one another. If you have something that's affecting the visual pathway, say something as straightforward as a cataract, you start to see things are hazy and you can't differentiate things at distance. You can't tell one from the other. Also, refractive errors in the eye, just needing glasses updated there. There can be retinal issues that do that, but usually that's diagnosed on examination. But actually, probably the most common thing is cataracts, or even, as I mentioned earlier, dry eye disease, where the vision is somewhat limited and changed by the fact that the surface of the eye is not smooth and the light does not get in clearly, so distant objects don't separate as well as they should.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. We are joined today on this Medical Monday by ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we jump over to line 5, Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
So my question is, I've got three questions about one condition. Blepharitis. I have been plagued with blepharitis for years, and it never goes away. And I've been told that it won't ever go away. And I treat it regularly with bacitracin lid thing at night. And I'm wondering if the blepharitis contributes to dry eyes, which I have. And I have been told that there's a treatment in which the eyelid, the eyes get heated up, and then there's
yes.
like a Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So the whole concept of having the proper ocular surface, which is the tears, the thin layer of very fine oil that covers the tears, that keeps things nice and smooth, all these things have to work in unison. And people have blepharitis. Now, what that means is blepharitis is inflammation of the eyelids. And it often has to do with some of these very fine little oil glands that reside right next to or behind your eyelashes. And if those glands aren't working properly, and there may be nutritional reasons for that, there may be they may be interfered with by mascara, makeup use. The little particles of makeup can actually block those little glands and prevent them from working properly. A lot of reasons. So we talk about in dry eye and blepharitis in general, we talk about cleansing the eyelids well. We talk about nutritional support of the cells in these glands that produce the very important components of the tears. We talk about making sure there's adequate tear production, so you have tear quality and quantity has to be addressed. You mentioned this other possibility. There is a treatment where we do use warm heat to help mobilize, soften the hardening oils within these oil glands and get them to work better. And that works in some people. You have to be, you know, evaluated to see if you're a good candidate for this. But if you are, we do that, and we can, you know, can treat your lids and try to get you much happier than you apparently have been for the last several years. So there are a lot of things we can do, even beyond the scope of this phone conversation. But blepharitis should not be given up on. Dry eye should not be given up on.
Could I ask about the bacitracin that I'm supposed to use? And every once in a while, I just rebel against it because I hate that sticky, gummy stuff.
Well, it's an ointment. It's an antibiotic ointment. So what it's doing, the good thing. Let me finish. The good thing is it's an antibiotic, so it's reducing the bacterial overgrowth on the eyelids, which may be part of the problem. But on the other hand, it's an oil. It's an oily goo that does not help these little glands around the eyelid to produce their oil. They kind of plug up, if you know what I'm saying. So there's a balance point here.
And there's never been a proof for me that what I have is actually a bacterial thing. So maybe that's why the bacitracin, the minute I stop using it,
it comes
everything
back.
Yeah.
These things need to be looked at by someone who has an expertise. Believe it or not, there are people who have absolute expertise in dry eye and in blepharitis conditions.
That may be someone, where I need to go next. Because
I think it sounds like it. It sounds like you haven't been satisfactorily aided at this point.
Well, Harriet, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs joins us on this Medical Monday. And Dee is in the Hudson Valley. Hello, Dee.
Oh, hello, Dr. Sachs.
Yes, hello.
Hello. Yes, okay. December 2019, just last December, I an angiofluorescein did this test to check the back of my eye. There was suspicious of birdshot chorioretinopathy.
Yes.
Okay, but all of my blood work was negative, HLA B29, B27, gold interferon, etc. Everything was negative. So then, you know, everything was just stopped there. There was no further investigation of the lesions. Another retina specialist had told me I had snowballs and snow banking. I don't know if that is related. But I will say that I have had a history of uveitis from 1998 to the present time. But from 2006 to 2016, no uveitis whatsoever. It came back in 2016 with a vengeance. And I've been I've been on the steroid drops since, you know, constantly. Anyway,
sure.
Last August, I had laser cataract surgery of both eyes. I have these oblong-shaped pupils, which are kind of, I guess, rare, whatever. Yeah. And during the surgery, they were rounded out with the laser. Okay. Now, another thing I'll mention, I am on treatment for an egg-laying parasite. I have one more week to go on that. I had a brain MRI on Friday, this past Friday, without contrast. Everything came back normal. And so, in other words, I was thinking maybe the creamy lesions could be egg larvae or something back my, but that was without contrast. So everything came back normal. So I'm really baffled. And the other question is that I would like to, I have the PCO, you know, the post-cataract opacification.
Yeah.
I would like to have the YAG treatment so that, because I have an obscurity, and it started in 2016 when the uveitis recurred. It's like, right. It's like an obscurity, and it was there before the surgery and after the surgery. And I would, and if I have the YAG, am I going to be in danger of, like, you're opening up the eye more to let more light in? Am I going to be at danger if the uveitis is still an issue, but it's going away, this egg laying treatment, whatever, is helping? So if I can totally get rid of the uveitis, could I have the YAG without danger of really damaging my eye should the uveitis return? So basically, that's my questions.
You've got a lot of stuff to unpack.
Sure.
But I'm afraid it's a little beyond the scope of this to do that. I would certainly recommend that you contact your ophthalmologist and discuss these problems in detail. Uveitis is inflammation in the eye. It's apparent that you don't have a cause for that, and some of the lesions on the back of the eye can look like this condition called birdshot retinopathy, which shows a certain pattern, but in and of itself often just runs a course. Without significant treatment. And if it's not affecting your actual vision or the center part of the back of the eye, can usually be observed with, to make sure that nothing progresses from there forward. Having had cataract surgery and the pupillary work, the pupil is, the iris, the pupil is the hole in the middle of the iris. The iris is very delicate, and sometimes interfering with that can cause or can stimulate inflammation. Hard to say. All these things need to be looked at in your individual case with a good exam and a good determination and further testing to see if any other reason for your inflammation in the eye can be determined. And that then reflects on the YAG treatment you mentioned, which is needed in most people who've had cataract surgery. There's a membrane that is left at the time of cataract surgery that's clear, transparent, but eventually starts to cloud up. And in people who have inflammation in the eye, that clouding can occur more rapidly. And then we take a laser right in the office and very quickly make an opening in the membrane, but it has to be done once everything else is under control, including any significant inflammation in the eye. So I hope I've given you some information, but a lot of what you need to do in this very, very complicated situation is sit down with your ophthalmologist and make sure that he or she understands what's going on and can answer your
question. It's just the ophthalmologist is so busy, and you're not allowed more than about 3 or 5 minutes. Do you take appointments?
We can't do that on the air here, Dee.
Oh, I see. I understand.
We can certainly put you in touch with the doctor if you email
us.
Okay,
I just need to have a doctor that will explain everything to me, because I this is why I'm calling today, because I can't get the answers I need, because I know I need to know how to proceed.
Yeah, you've got a lot of stuff that needs to be looked at. So, please seek the attention of someone who will give you the time you need.
Yeah, that was a detailed call. Let's go to line 7, Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello,
hello?
Nancy.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I've been taking those PreserVision dietary supplements for quite a while. I have macular degeneration, which has become quite severe. I am legally blind at this point. And I'm just wondering if there's any point in continuing to use them, or I keep thinking, well, maybe my eyes would have gotten worse a lot faster, or maybe they'd even be worse than they are if I weren't taking the PreserVision supplements, but I had no idea if I should.
Macular degeneration is an unfortunate condition that causes a breakdown, a degeneration of the central part of the retina, which is the macula. If you think of the eye, the back of the eye is a bullseye target, the bullseye itself is the macula. It's where you see most accurately. And when it starts to have breakdown of the nerves and blood vessels very finely arranged within that macular area, that's macular degeneration. It's considered by many to be a metabolic imbalance. So what was done over the course of years is studies were done to try to determine if there were any dietary supplements that might help support the health of that area, which is a very rapid metabolic area, so it has a very fast metabolism. And if you don't have enough of certain vitamins and minerals and other support nutrients, maybe that will affect the function of that area and allow it to break down more quickly. So the idea was that, yes, it turns out that some of these supplements do help. And they continue to help in the sense that there's still the disease going on, but you've tried to slow it down by giving yourself nutritional supplements. There are many other things that can be done, and your case should be looked at individually to see if other treatments might be helpful to slow the process. But I wouldn't have you stop the ARIDS, PreserVision nutrients, until you've spoken to your ophthalmologist at length about this exact issue.
All right, well, I have talked to him, and I didn't think to ask this question, though, about the PreserVision, so I'll keep taking it, and I hope I can, continue to at least be able to see what I can at this point.
Well, that's the point. You want to preserve what you have, so take them for the time being, but talk to your doctor, see if there's anything else he might suggest that might be helpful. And it's a disease that unfortunately doesn't stop, but it can be slowed down. This is what we're trying to do. So,
well, Nancy, thank you for the call. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest today on Medical Monday. 800-348-2551, the number. And let's grab one more call before our next break. Akasha in Western Massachusetts, you're on.
Hello. Thank you both for being there.
Hi.
So I have a question about Sjogren's disease.
Okay.
I have it. And we've already done the plugs, and I was started on the Restasis and the Lodamax. I have to switch because Restasis goes on back order, so then I use the Lodamax.
Yes.
And I do that dance. Well, what I've noticed this year with allergies, which are really bad this year, that suddenly water is just, my eyes get so irritated, and so tears start pouring down my face,
I'm
crying.
Right. A real problem with
the
cycle.
The weird thing is, though, the tears don't help. You know what I mean? My eyes are always dry.
Yeah, you've got a problem with Sjogren's. is a condition. It's a genetic condition, and it causes dry mucous membranes. So your mouth is dry and your eyes get dry because you're not producing enough tears. But as I mentioned before, there's a lot of components to tears, and as a result, you can have tear quality. I'm sorry, you can have tear quantity, which apparently you have. You make a lot of tears, but they're of poor quality. And that's the difference I want you to understand. And there are ways that we can adjust that or at least work with that to try to make you more comfortable. Clearly, you're using the artificial tears, but your eyes are still watering. Your eyes are irritated this time of year with the pollen count going up. And each year, the pollen in the spring gets worse and worse, apparently, over the past number of years. All these things need to be adjusted. So you're taking eye drops that help to produce more natural tears. You're taking some steroid drops, which suppress inflammation. It's kind of a balancing act that really needs to be monitored very carefully, and consider making changes as necessary if you're not getting the benefit you're supposed to be getting from it. We can't cure it because it's not curable, but it is manageable. You understand the difference? We can manage it.
You.
Yeah, that's what we do quite a bit of.
All right, Akasha, thanks a lot. We have to take a break. One email here came in, doctor, before the email, and this is from Artie, or before we take our break. Artie writes, when I take a sip of my coffee, I get a pain in my eye. What should I do?
Take the straw out.
Ah, you see? I think Artie worked in the Catskills many years ago. Try the veal. We'll be back. Robert Sachs is here. It's Medical Monday, and more calls coming up. It's Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. Our guest today is ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. And let's see, two emails here, and then we'll hit the home stretch on the phones, doctor. This one is from Paul. Paul writes, my eyesight was 20/19 or better up until I was around age 41 or 42. Since then, my close-up eyesight has decreased, At this point, I need to wear reading glasses for reading and any close vision. I know that there are different types of corrections of surgery, such as LASIK. However, my understanding is there isn't currently any surgery for the type of sight loss I have. What, if anything, is in the pipeline to change this? And there are many of us of a certain age who would love the answer to this one, doctor.
Okay, well, what you have is a condition that's called in the Latin presbyopia, which means the aging eye. And yeah. Basically what happens is the focusing system in the eye that allows the eye to focus from distance to near involves a muscle, and it involves changing the shape of the natural lens in the eye. The lens has become more dense, more hardened, as you will, as your eye develops over the course of years, and it is on the way to becoming a cataract. Everybody does this. And the muscle in the eye can't maneuver that, can't change that lens shape as easily, and it takes a lot more stress. So what used to be great vision at distance and very good vision up close, you start to lose the close part, and you can't focus in as closely. You have to hold things farther away. Your arms are too short when you try to read the paper, for example. And for that, glasses are the immediate answer. They just give you the focusing power in the lens that you don't have, that you've lost in your natural eye. And that can be adjusted over time. Eventually, though, you get to the point where you can't, you know, you're having other problems with your vision, and the cataract becomes the consideration. We talk about cataract surgery at that point. And we have a number of different types of cataract surgery lenses, replacement lenses, implants, intraocular lens implants that provide certain services to you. And some of the latest implants have what we call multifocality. They have multiple focal points. So we can put a lens in your eye, if you're a candidate for this type of surgery, that replaces your natural lens. That's the cataract surgery. But the implant lens has the ability to give you focus at distance and at middle, say, for example, a computer screen at arm's length, and also for reading.
Hmm.
And a lot of people are thrilled with this capacity.
Well, that's great. This email came in from Catherine in Troy. Hey, can you explain the difference between blepharitis and dry eye? I thought they were the same thing, but it sounds like maybe not. And that's from Kat.
They are part of a wider problem with what we call ocular surface disease or dry eye disease. Blepharitis is a contributor to that because the blepharitis causes inflammation of the eyelids. You don't produce the proper amount or the proper composition of components of your natural tears. With poor quality tears comes poor vision and feelings of dryness or irritation. So they're all connected, and they need to be all looked at. They're not separate things.
Okay, we have actually so many people who have been waiting a very long time, so let's try to get through a few calls here. Beverly in South Amherst. Beverly, you're up.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
I have a question about narrow angles. I've had one eye done, and I'm having a second one done shortly. My question is this a treatment that I will have to have again?
I believe the treatment you're having was a laser treatment. Am I correct?
Yes, it is. It's a laser treatment, yes.
So narrow angles is a structural change within the eye where the angle, which is where the fluid naturally produced within the eye, the fluid gets out of the eye through this angle. Okay, let's call it that. But in some people, that little drain port becomes very narrow, and you're at risk for developing a form of glaucoma. When we see that in someone, we offer this laser treatment, which is quick and done in the office, and it puts a little tiny microscopic laser hole through the iris, not at the pupil, but off to the edge, allowing a second path for fluid to get out of the around through the eye and prevent you from having what we call a glaucoma attack of angle closure. So if the angle gets too narrow and the and closes off, that's a closure of the angle. The pressure in the eye goes up very quickly and causes a form of glaucoma that can be quite intense. So to prevent that, we offer these laser treatments. That's what you had, and it usually, rarely, needs to be repeated.
Well, thank you. I have a lot more confidence in the procedure now. Thank you very much.
You should.
Beverly, okay, thanks
thank
a lot
you.
For the call. Ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs joins us on this Medical Monday. Susan in Schenectady. Hello, Susan.
Hello. Hello, Ray, and hello, Dr. Sachs. Thank you to you both. Question about some effects that I've had after a very successful cataract removal end of February. Things have been fine. The windows are washed. I can see better. However, I have a floater. I've had a history of a lot of floaters. They haven't been terribly problematic. However, there's one now that's larger and makes my vision more blurry in the surgery eye, and it has a solid center or a darker center. So it moves back and forth, and when I try to read, it makes it much more difficult.
It can be annoying, yes.
Hope for this?
Yes. So cataract surgery, quite successful, but it does cause changes in the fluids of the eye, some shifts in those fluids. The main fluid in the back of the eye is called the vitreous. It's a gel-like substance when you're younger, but it starts to liquefy and form little protein, almost like little pieces of protein congeal into these little specks. And that is the floaters. So it's not uncommon for you to get floaters with age anyway. Cataract surgery can sometimes reveal them because now you've taken that lens out of the eye and the floaters become more prominent. The point is, what do you do about floaters? Used to be we didn't have much to do, but we now have some procedures we can offer if they're really annoying. And we have people who come in with floaters, and because of their job requirements or just some other situation, they can't, it really bothers them. They like to do something that requires, eyesight without that kind of an annoying little thing bobbing around in front of you. And there is a procedure we do that is an operation. It's a brief operation in the operating room. We go into the eye through the wall of the eye and remove that gel and the floater in a few minutes, and that's it. It's a surgery. We have to go over all the risks and benefits of it, but uniformly, it's quite successful, and people who are annoyed by floaters can be helped by this.
But don't you need the gel? Don't you have to put it back?
No, it's really important in development when you're a baby. After a certain period of time, you don't need it anymore, and it can be removed if it becomes, say, loaded with floaters. Some people have had hemorrhage bleeding into that area. We can remove it for that purpose. For example, people with diabetes, it doesn't need to be there, and we just replace it with a saltwater solution, and that's the end of it. It's a very straightforward procedure. So it's really annoying to you.
Go ahead, Susan.
No, that's fine. It is somewhat annoying. I'm kind of thinking that this may improve over the next couple of months, but I don't know.
It might. The floater is heavier than the fluid in which it floats. It could settle away from the center and be less apparent. We don't rush to do these surgeries. We make sure that there has been an adequate period of time to allow the floater to settle if it's going to. I should also mention one other thing that we do sometimes, but there's a laser procedure where you can actually take that floater and break it into a bunch of little pieces, which in some people is an improvement.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot.
There's options. There are options. Don't if it really annoys you, go and have it checked out, please.
Susan, thank you for the call. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest today on the program, and Marlene in Warwick, you're on.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call, Ray and Dr. Sachs.
Hi.
I'm due for my routine eye exam sometime this year after the whole virus thing settles down. And I heard that there's read there's a new alternative to dilation, Optis retinal imaging devices. Are you familiar with that, doctor? And
Yes.
that really even available to someone who's over 65?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's available. It's a camera system that allows the peripheral part of the retina, which is very important to be looked at, to be examined. But in my opinion, it is not as good as an actual exam. You have to look back there. You have to see details. It's just, it's a replacement, but not fully. A good eye exam by, your eye doctor should include dilated evaluation.
Right.
So that the wall of the eye can be seen. And I must say, it's good you're good. Mm-hmm. You're having your routine exams. I must say that with this COVID pandemic currently causing everybody to be standing on shaky ground about what to do with medical things, chronic diseases don't stop because there's a COVID epidemic. My point being that we're unfortunately seeing people who have kind of stopped coming into the office. We're calling them to come in because we have to check their glaucoma, their macular degeneration, their diabetic eye disease, their cataract growth, to make sure that things don't get out of control. So please make sure you do have your regular exams, and if you're being followed for particular conditions, make sure you get those exams on a regular basis. You know, our offices are, you know, disinfected. We have temperature testing at the door. I mean, it's a, you know, it's in a sense, it's a very safe place to come and have an eye exam, which should be done so that things don't get out of control.
You know, if you had to put a percentage on it, what percentage of your regular patients have stopped coming?
Well, you know, we contact them. We do a lot of telemedicine. We're talking to them and trying to assess their situation. If there's any concern, we have them come in. We have a whole staff of people dedicated to this whole thing. You know, there are some people who are just worried about going out or going to a doctor's office, yet they have a condition that, as I say, is progressive and could get out of control.
Yeah.
And we don't like to see that because it's hard to get things back under control once they've spun out of control. Macular degeneration, diabetics, as I say, people with glaucoma need to be seen on a regular basis, no question. Just like having your blood pressure checked and having other chronic conditions looked at on a regular basis so that they don't get out of control as well.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest, and we go to Chuck in Worcester. Chuck, you're up.
Hi, my question is, using the iPad a lot more than I ever used to, I now find that in the morning my eyes tear, and I almost feel like what I had, remember when I had the measles as a little kid, is that it's like sand in my eyes, and I just wondered if that's something from just overuse or excessive use of the iPad, or is it a condition that I should have checked?
It's not the iPad in and of itself, but it sounds like related to a dry eye condition. In other words, if your eyes are scratchy in the morning, you're not, you know, your eyes aren't producing enough tears to keep themselves moist and comfortable, you're focusing harder, but you're also focusing more at near for the iPad. So all these things need to be addressed. One thing we tell people who do a lot of work with screens is that every 20 minutes or so, look at something 20 feet away for 20 seconds. They kind of call it the 20-20-20 rule. It just lets your eyes relax so that you're not straining your eyes at near. I don't care if you're on a computer in an office or reading it, you know, looking at an iPad. Look away. Give it a few seconds to for the eyes to kind of relax a little bit. Let the muscle in the eye relax a little bit. But then we also have the other issue of dry eye, which sounds like is one of the problems that you have too. And you can start with some artificial tears. Put them in at least 2, 3, 4 times a day. You can use them more and see if you can get some comfort that way. If not, contact your ophthalmologist. Have somebody take a peek at you and see if there's anything else they can offer.
Chuck, thank you very much. Over to Salem, and Ray is up. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you guys?
Good.
A quick question about macular degeneration. I know a caller called earlier, very similar question. My mother, who's 89, takes the Arids, and I know that, I think that helps her, and she's diligent about taking that. But she can no longer read. Is there anything I could do? Is there anything that would help her, an apparatus of sorts, so she can read, especially right now through the COVID situation? She's going crazy.
Right, right, exactly.
Just
well,
a question,
first of all,
if there's anything I could do to help her, really.
Yeah, I understand your concern. The macular degeneration needs to be watched to see if there's a progression. The Arids is one of several supplement types that people use to try to slow the process. We have to make sure that everything else in the eye is working properly. Does she have a cataract? Does she have dry eye? And then you say, let's say we've eliminated those issues. You've cleared the path for the light to get into the eye and to the back of the eye. If the a light lands on a diseased macula, that's going to cause some problems. What can we do to mitigate that problem? And these are all issues that you should discuss. There are low vision aids. Something as straightforward as a magnifying glass, higher power
glasses. Well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
There are small portable. Imagine a small paperback book that's got a camera on one side and a screen on the other, and you put your reading material under this thing, and the image comes out on the other side much magnified. There are a lot of things that can be done, but first make sure that all the medical issues are identified and as well controlled as possible. And then you can talk about low vision aids, which there are things that can be done.
Well, Ray, thank you very much for the call. We only have a minute or so, maybe two left. And Gina in Monterey. Gina, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know the benefits and risks of laser versus non-laser surgery for cataracts.
Okay. Cataract surgery involves the removal of the lens, the natural lens that has become cloudy. And we have at our disposal a laser that in some cases is helpful in making some of the small incisions into the wall of the eye and to help make the cataract easier to remove. It's not a necessity. And some surgeons strongly feel that they can do as good, and they have proven it, as good or a better job without the laser. Some people like to use the laser. The laser is an added cost to the patient. It comes out of your pocket. Medicare does not pay for the laser. But if your surgeon feels it's something that's going to be helpful to you and it can explain why, it's a level of treatment that it might be beneficial. But each case is individual. So you look at the overall scheme and you say, okay, you would do best with this type of surgery procedure. There are also decisions to be made about the type of implant lens that I discussed earlier, whether you want a single focus lens or a multifocal lens. And that.
Okay, I think we are having some signal issues with your phone now, doctor, but the timing could not be better because the show's over. And thank you for when do you think you'll be back at the office full time with a full staff?
Well, we're ramping up now. We have not closed. We've been open the whole time for emergencies and urgencies, and we continue to do so. And we're ramping up, and we're seeing patients as necessary. And people are starting to come in more frequently. We have to do things, of course, to maintain social distance and disinfection. We have a long list of things we take care of, but we are well in operation.
Well, Dr. Robert Sachs, thank you so much for being here today. Support comes from Retired Public Employees Association, working in the interest of retirees from New York State and local governments. You earned your retirement. RPEA protects it. Learn more at rpea.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Robert Sachs for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the call. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. We'll try to do a better job of that next time. And, you know, you could always call a little bit earlier. That's a good thing, too. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Charlene Knight. Our long-suffering producer is Jackie Orchard. And, you know, I can't. Sometimes I'm not the easiest person to get along with. I get it. And I just wanted to thank her for being patient to some extent. Tomorrow on the program, Rich Guthrie and Braids. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.